From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala. Today on Target, we'll be talking about a recent controversial editorial and upcoming events.
Then we'll sit down with Charlie Scott, the chair of the Presidential Search Committee. Stay with us. All right, well, let's get into it. So first things first, this week in the Gettysburgian, Liam Kerr, a Gettysburg College senior, published an editorial titled An Unconventional Proposal to End School-Sanctioned Greek Life, in which he argued that Greek life is essentially a net negative on the Gettysburg College campus, and that he suggests the best solution is total elimination. Thereof. He suggests that the Greek life, that the Greek system reinforces a, quote, patriarchal structure that is enforced by the existence of houses for male fraternities but not for female sororities. And such a system, he says, enables the prevailing rape culture by centering the campus's social life within male-dominated houses riddled with incessant drinking. In other words, the conditions are perfect for sexual assault and harassment. He goes on to say that although the campus has CAB and other activities on the weekends that promote alcohol-free revelry, that those structures are insufficient, but that nevertheless, the best solution to end the, quote, culture of misogyny, excessive drinking, and exclusion is to end campus-sponsored Greek life. Your reaction, Gari?
Yeah, so on one hand, when I first read the editorial, I saw some merit to what Liam had to say. But on the other hand, I don't think that this is an unconventional proposal at all. I think a lot of people talk about ending Greek life on this campus and many other college campuses. However, I don't think it's necessarily fair to say that a college is in charge completely of making sure that kids have things to do on the weekends. Yeah, we have CAB and we have parties, but I don't think that that's the college's job to make more events for.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think Liam's point, and he kind of gets into this a little bit in a part I didn't quote, is that Gettysburg is a fairly rural town without exactly a hopping nightlife on its own. And so that to the extent that the college wants to attract people that want to come here, and this gets into a bit of a discussion on admissions and how the college markets itself. But, you know, the tagline on these college tours, the campus tours, is that, you know, 30% of students participate in Greek life, which, of course, ignores the fact that the entire first year class is not eligible. So I think President Riggs said last week on this podcast that it's upwards of 50%. And I think that number rings true. You know, It's an interesting question to what extent the college is responsible for what students are doing when they're not in class. Gettysburg certainly markets itself as a residential liberal arts college, and certainly I think it's worth noting that Res Life is actually known as the Office of Residential and First Year Programming, that residential programming is supposed to be happening all the time, and that it's an important part of the experience of going to Gettysburg College. And so I do think, you know, maybe to push back a little bit on your point there, that the college, if it's going to market itself as a residential college, has some responsibility to provide a residential experience. And to Liam's point, if that experience is currently being primarily provided through frat parties, which I think many would argue that it is, that maybe they should be investing in other strategies.
However, I don't think that ending all Greek life is going to make anything safer. I think arguably it would make it less safe. Ending Greek life means that, you know, frats wouldn't exist, so there wouldn't be any type of registering of parties, which is less accountability. To say that if we ended Greek life tomorrow, that we wouldn't still see fraternities and sororities 3 years later is, I think, naive.
Well, I mean, I think there's something to be said there. You know, how far are you going to push prohibition, you know, on these sorts of things? If the college were to start randomly or not even randomly, but start assigning housing using other criteria and were to take control of the frat houses and, you know, house other students there and leave and totally ban off-campus housing, you know, that would certainly be a dramatic shift. And I don't know that that's necessarily something that we'll see happen. I think that this is probably not something that we're going to see in the immediate future, but I don't know what would be the case there. Certainly, I think the idea that college students aren't going to drink on the weekends kind of defies logic.
And I think beyond that, the thought that all college students are drinking solely in frats, I think, is also problematic. I don't think that there's so many kids on this campus that I don't think are just consuming alcohol in frats. You know, they're consuming it in first year dorms. They're consuming it in themed houses. They're consuming it wherever they can, really. And I think it, while there is underage drinking happening in fraternities, and that's its own conversation, I don't think that that culture will end with frats ending. And I don't think sexual assault will end with frats ending. What I think what needs to happen is, rather than destroying something that a lot of people really take part in, is instead, you know, working to create safer environments, you know, restructuring the ways in which brotherhoods and sisterhoods work, that not only are you caring for your friends that are in these groups with you, but you're also holding them accountable for things that they say and do. I don't think that it's too much to ask that even though you're in the same fraternity as somebody, if you hear that they've done something that's incorrect, I don't think it's your job to protect them. And I think that that's what we should be getting at. I don't think it's about, I do think there's something to be said about sober monitoring, which is what a lot of, what the IFC and Panhellenic is working towards currently. But I think that to an extent that becomes victim blaming and saying that as long as you're not drinking, you won't get raped. I think it comes down to having a zero tolerance policy for rape and sexual assault and any type of violence on this campus. And I don't think that that starts with banning something so that it just goes underground.
Yeah, and I think President Riggs said something similar last week, that she is concerned that, you know, I think she was actually fairly candid on this podcast last week when she said that, you know, the college in the current format, having an Office of Student Activities and Greek Life with several professional staff members over there, has more of a hold on what is going on in these Greek organizations than it would if it were to cut and run, as some campuses have done. There is alumni involvement in a lot of these organizations, particularly with respect to the houses. I think she's probably right that if the college were to end its sponsorship or endorsement of Greek Life, that it would continue to exist in other forms. And so, you know, interesting stuff. I think that Liam's editorial has been read a number of times.
Absolutely.
And I think that there's a robust conversation happening around it. And we'll have to see where that goes from here. So with that, I know that there are some voter registration efforts underway on campus. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So College Democrats is going with a new goal of 300 new voters registered by the November elections. Their president, Andrew Dalton, stated that, you know, this is a nonpartisan effort. This isn't about registering Democrats. This isn't about registering people, you know, to vote against the Republican Party. This is more about making sure that people are voting. A lot of people, I think, would think that because the College Democrats are doing this, that it's entirely about, you know, ending Trump or whatever. But in my conversations with people in College Democrats, they have registered people to both sides of the line. So far, I believe in the last 7 days, Dalton said that they got about 50 new voters, and they want to try to I guess, sixth-tuple that? Is that the terminology?
Multiply that by six?
Multiply that by six, yeah, I guess.
So you're referring to Andrew Dalton, the president of College Democrats.
Yes.
And, you know, 300 new registered voters is quite an ambitious goal, considering there are approximately 2,500 students on this campus. That's,
absolutely,
you know, 12%, one in eight almost, that would be previously not registered and subsequently registered after this drive if they met their goal, which is quite ambitious. Worth noting that coming up in November is the election on the ballot here in Pennsylvania. For those who may be out of state or just otherwise unaware, the governor, Tom Wolf, is up for re-election. He's a Democrat. He's squaring off against Scott Wagner, a former state senator, Republican. Both of them are from York County, interestingly enough, which is just to our east. Scott Wagner is the CEO of Penn Waste, a trash company. And so that's been one interesting race to follow. Also on the ballot is U.S. Senator Bob Casey, also up for re-election. This would be, I believe, his third term were he to win. And I think he is probably favored to win, although it's still Pennsylvania, still a state that President Trump carried in 2016 with an incumbent Democrat in the Senate. Casey facing off against Lou Barletta, U.S. congressman who first rose to national prominence when he was the mayor of Hazleton back in, I think, 2006, when he fought through to get some ordinances passed on that imposed some rather restrictive anti-immigration measures. And since then, he has been a stalwart on that issue nationally. And so he is the candidate facing off against Casey. Also on the ballot in some local races, there's a state representative, state senator on the ballot. Of course, Gettysburg is now this fall in a different congressional district than it was previously. Previously, Scott Perry, currently Scott Perry is the representative for Gettysburg, along with Adams County and much of, I believe, York County. However, in the redrawn congressional districts, Gettysburg gets thrown west and goes all the way out to just east of Pittsburgh, while other parts of Scott Perry's old district will get folded in up towards Harrisburg. And that is the district in which Perry is running this time around. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Gettysburg's now in the 13th district, which goes all the way out to Somerset County, and that is east of Pittsburgh. And so the incumbent, there is no incumbent, is what we're getting at here. And so Pennsylvania voters will head to the polls with a variety of different options come November. And so there are, you know, a variety of races, and people should register to vote. The voter registration deadline, I believe, is October the 10th or thereabouts. So still some time. Gettysburg College students received an email this week from the Dean of Students, Julie Ramsey, with some information on how to get registered. And, you know, you can register to vote in Gettysburg if you're a college student, or you can register to vote wherever it is that you reside the other months of the year and vote either in person by going home or an absentee ballot. The Pennsylvania deadline for absentee ballots is towards the end of October. What else do you have to talk about this week?
Well, coming up on Friday, September 14th, is the third annual National Theater Live Festival at the Majestic Theater, 6 plays in 3 days.
6 plays in 3 days. Well, that even rhymes.
Yeah, I know. It's like they thought about it for a second. There's going to be pre-show talks with professors. They're playing Macbeth and Follies on Friday. They're playing Young Marx, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And you can have a pre-show talk with Chris Kaufman, who's the associate professor and chairperson of theater arts, on Saturday. And then on Sunday...
You know Chris Kaufman.
I do know Chris Kaufman. He is my professor and one of my directors. Great guy. Chris, I hope you're listening. And on Sunday, they'll be showing Follies again, Julius Caesar and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, which will have a pre-show talk with Susan Russell, who's the Associate Professor of Theater Arts and Chairperson of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies, who's also one of my professors in the theater department.
Wow, it's almost like we planned this. By the way, I just looked up the candidates for the 13th District. This time around are John Joyce, a physician from the western part of the state, and Brett Ottaway is the Democratic candidate. So Brett Ottaway and John Joyce on the ballot for the 13th District. I will not be voting in the 13th District, which is why I was unaware of who the candidates were. I'll vote in my home district over in Lancaster County.
But you can indeed vote if you're voting in this district in Cub, I believe, right?
I believe the polling place is back to the College Union Building Ballroom last year due to the construction. I think they had it over at the firehouse. But if I'm not mistaken, it is back on the college campus this fall, which makes things fairly convenient for students.
Now, Ben, you were recently talking to me about some water issues happening in Plank with this new bout of thunderstorms.
Well, as near as I can tell, and I'm no expert on, construction, but it appears that the new College Union building is uphill from the Plank Gym, which is where WZBT and the Gettysburgians offices are, in addition to a variety of other campus institutions. The Center for Public Service is upstairs. The Anthropology Department is upstairs. In any case, now that anytime it rains, there seems to be an influx of water into the basement. Earlier today, we're recording this on Saturday, there were several workers from the college's maintenance and facilities staff working to essentially squeegee up a bunch of water that had gotten in after a fairly light rain that occurred yesterday. And this is not the first time in recent days that there have been issues with water running into the Plank Gym basement. After a bit of rain earlier this summer, that happened as well. And with more rain in the forecast for this week, it'll certainly be an interesting thing to see. You know, an offhanded comment I heard earlier today was that the college is improving some buildings at the expense of others. That, you know, previously when there was not this direct downhill runoff water situation from the Cub towards Plank, that there was less of an issue. But we'll have to keep an eye on that to see whether it, you know, truly is an ongoing concern or just kind of a fluky thing. But in any case, there was a good bit of water and when I came into Plank Gym this morning.
Yeah, I was in rehearsal earlier today in a Klein Theater, and while it was raining, we heard dripping coming from somewhere, so we walked over, and right in between the Klein Theater stage and Stevens Theater, the Black Box, there was just a line of just water coming down and coming down and collecting in a pool, which is a little troublesome considering that it is wooden floors on that stage.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it just, you know, recalls anytime you hear about water in basements at Gettysburg College, it recalls last spring when there were some issues involving mold. And so, you know, we'll hope for the college's sake that that's not another concern this time. But, you know, we're going to be checking in a few days, later this week or next week, doing a bit of a tour of the Hanson basement to see what it looks like several months after the mold incident. The college, for what it's worth, did complete its promised visual inspection of all campus residential facilities this summer for mold. They worked with a firm called Compliance Management International to do so. And we're told that those issues that were found have been remediated, but I think students are certainly still on the prowl for any lingering issues after what happened last spring.
Definitely.
All right, we'll be right back with the Bullet Report. It's been an exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. On September the 5th, the women's soccer team defeated Stevenson 4-3. The field hockey team defeated Catholic 2-1. The volleyball team defeated Catholic 3-2. The women's cross-country team defeated Franklin and Marshall 41-20, but fell to Dickinson 50-15. The men's cross-country team fared similarly, defeating Franklin and Marshall 45-18 and losing to Dickinson 38-21. The volleyball team continued its undefeated streak this weekend at the Lycoming tournament, defeating Clark Summit 3-0. Lycoming 3-0, SUNY Cortland 3-0, and Dickinson 3-1. The women's golf team finished 5th of 7 at the McDaniel Invitational. The field hockey team defeated Cabrini 6-2. The football team lost to Ursinus 42-7. The men's soccer team lost to the College of New Jersey 2-1, and the women's soccer team defeated Elizabethtown 3-0. Thus endeth the Bullet Report. We'll be right back with Charlie Scott. And we're joined today by Charlie Scott, who is the vice chair of the College Board of Trustees and is chairing the Presidential Search Committee. Mr. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.
Why don't we start, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be on the Board of Trustees and how you came to be chairing the search for our 15th president at Gettysburg College.
Sure. Well, I don't know how far I should go back, but I will say that I came to Gettysburg in 1973, graduated in 1977, probably not a noteworthy year other than it is the same class that Janet Morgan Riggs graduated in. My wife and I both graduated in 1977. I got re-engaged with the college probably in the late 90s as a result of actually a news article that Gettysburg saw about a promotion I had received to a global leadership role within my firm. And I served on the alumni board of directors for 10 years, president of it for the last 4 years. And in that role, the only role specified in the bylaws of the Board of Trustees, the only role that is automatically guaranteed as a Board of Trustee member is the president of the alumni board. So I spent 4 years representing the alumni on the Board of Trustees. All 4 of those years, I was also a vice chair of the board under the prior board chairman, Jim Schemmel. And this year, under the new board chair, David Brennan, I'm actually the executive vice chair. And with the specific responsibility of chairing the Presidential Search Committee.
Mm-hmm. And so can you take us back to, I guess, last May, when President Riggs made the public announcement that she would be retiring at the end of the 2018-19 academic year after, I guess, that will make 11 years as the college's president. How did the board go about forming the search committee, and how did you become the designee to chair it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I was given a fair amount of latitude to recommend the search committee, and I took my learnings from the prior search committee, the one that actually had searched and resulted in Janet's appointment, and I also had done a lot of reading about how to create a well-operating search committee. From that, I got recommendations from a variety of sources. I got recommendations for members of the Board of Trustees who would be good potential board members. I got recommendations from the faculty about who they felt would make good contributing board presidential search committee members. I got recommendations from College Life about student representation, and I got recommendations from administration about people to represent the staff of the college. And I put that all together. I looked to create some balance, gender-related balance. I looked to create diversity. And I made my recommendation to Jim Schemmel and Dave Brennan, and it was accepted.
Mm-hmm. And so just so folks are aware, the committee, I guess, has 13 members.
Yes.
7 of them are members of the Board of Trustees. There are three faculty members, one administrator, one member of the support staff, and one student. I believe that makes 13.
Very good.
So there, I got them all. I won't try and name everyone now, although I guess folks could go on online and, you know, there are some nice headshots of everyone online. And so lately, over the last few weeks, the board, in conjunction with the search firm, and I guess we spoke earlier in the summer about Russell Reynolds, the search firm that the board or the committee has retained for this search, has been on a bit of a listening tour, and that's what brings you to campus today. I suppose we should mention, for the sake of context, that we're recording this interview at 4 o'clock on Thursday, and on 5 o'clock at 5 o'clock on Thursday, there will be a forum for students who may not have been on campus the first time around. And so that's why we're privileged to have some of your time today. And Gary, I know you attended the first forum, so maybe you'd like to ask about that.
Yeah, I did. You know, there was obviously an interesting group of students. There's a lot of students that are very involved with campus, which is why they like were here in the summer. And it was definitely a very lively discussion. I think that it'll be the same way today. It'll be students that want to come and want to talk about what they want in their next president. So far, in terms of how the committee and Russell Reynolds themselves have been receiving information from students and other forums that have happened, what have you guys gained from what people have had to say about getting a new president?
Yeah, well, let me start at the high level by saying we've had an awful lot of engagement. According to Russell Reynolds, who go through this regularly, this is a highly engaged campus, which is great to hear, and not that surprising. We have a web-enabled survey, which is actually still open, even though we had set a deadline. And I looked at it yesterday, and we were just shy of 2,500 responses. So we've gotten great input from people on campus, from parents, from alumni, and adding that to the live feedback that we've received, which provides a lot more texture at the end of the day. We think we have a good sense of what the greater college community seeks in the 15th president, and it gives us a good foundation from which to develop the prospectus that we'll finalize in the next week or 10 days and be available to all the applicants who would want to apply for the position, as well as those that we might want to nudge into applying to the position.
And so today, I guess, sort of wraps up the early stages of the listening phase. And from there, you said that you'll meet and the committee will draft the prospectus. Can you kind of talk about where the timeline goes from here?
Sure. I'm going to keep it general only because some things sort of leave our control at this stage. But in general, we view the fall as the search phase, where we'll collect applications that will come as a result of advertising that we do, that will come as a result of people making recommendations based upon folks they may have encountered or readings they may have done, and also from work we'll do actually going out where we have targeted people who at this point don't even know they're interested, but we would hope to interest them. So that'll take the fall. And then during the winter months, we'll go through the interviewing phase. And the interviewing phase sort of begins with winnowing down the applications we get to those that generally meet our criteria. And then probably having interviews with 15 or 20 of those folks. And assuming that yields what we would call some finalist candidates, hopefully by late winter, we're in the finalist phase of interviewing three or four people that we can get ready to present a recommendation from to the full board in the spring.
And so once you've gone down to the finalist stage, I know that when, you know, searches are happening for faculty positions or some administrative positions, several candidates will end up visiting campus and making presentations. And is that something that you imagine will happen in this particular search? Or do you think that the committee will make one recommendation to the Board of Trustees and that's the only name that anyone will ever hear outside of the committee?
Yeah, it'll probably be closer to the latter because confidential searches at the president level, particularly among private institutions, which don't have to operate in according to sunshine laws, are by and large confidential processes. Our number one goal is to get a candidate pool which has the very best candidates we can get. And the first thing they'll ask is whether it's a confidential or non-confidential process. And if they are sitting in strong positions right now where they have a lot of responsibility, they're trying to hire people, they're trying to raise funds, they won't be interested in our position if we tell them they're going to have to open up their candidacy to the general public, because that'll threaten their position where they are presently. And so to achieve our number one goal of having the best possible candidate pool, we'll keep it confidential. And we'll keep it confidential throughout the process. We potentially will entertain some way of getting some limited feedback from a small group of opinion leaders prior to making the recommendation of one name to the board. But our responsibility is to present one name to the board for their approval.
Mm-hmm. And so after today, really, what opportunities, if any, will members of the campus community or interested constituencies have to weigh in on the search?
Well, they'll continue to have opportunities to weigh in on the search in terms of what the school needs throughout the process. And part of the reason we set up the committee in the way we did was to give them each someone who is for which they have a constituent base, if you will. For example, even in picking out the faculty, we purposely picked out a member of each division of the faculty so that they would have someone they could go to continue to give their input. And things may come up between now and when we conclude the process that are important to think about. One example might be a lot of the discussion taking place about fraternities mm-hmm. on college campuses. And just today there was a significant interview on CBS of the president of Penn State University about his commitment to ending hazing on campus. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't shock me if members of the college community had a point of view on that and wanted to share that with someone on the presidential search committee and talk about how that might become part of the discussion or the questioning process of our presidential candidates. And they can do that throughout.
I think one thing that was brought up at the student forum, and something that continues to be brought up in conversations with the student body, is the idea of someone similar to President Riggs, especially in terms of personability. You know, we don't have someone who just stays in their office and is a figurehead. Everyone has, you know, seen her walking around campus and things like that. And I think one of the more Gettysburg-centric memes going around Facebook right now is the idea of a JMR 2.0. You know, we see that on Facebook a lot. So is the committee looking for someone very similar to President Riggs? Are they looking to go in a different direction?
Well, if I could unpack that a little bit, mm-hmm. I would say that from the standpoint of personal qualities and attributes, we're clearly looking for someone who's like Janet. I like to make the point that I probably know Janet longer than certainly anyone on the search committee and maybe 99% of the people here on campus, maybe other than Ed Riggs, because because we all met when we were 18 years old. But, you know, Janet does embody an awful lot of the qualities that we would want in any president, beginning with integrity. And integrity, I've read, is sort of, if you wanted to give it a mathematical equation, integrity equals honesty plus transparency. And, you know, those are characteristics that she has. In addition to that, her ability to create a sense of college community, her ability to keep things informal enough so that everyone feels that they're part of, you know, an environment and she's part of that environment and they know her. Those are all very important things on a residential small college campus like this. And so we'll definitely be looking for that. We'll probably not find someone who's been, you know, was a student and been here for 30 years. And maybe we also want someone who is going to focus on some things that Janet wasn't able to focus as much on in her time here and get some complementary sort of vision in those areas.
Are there specific areas maybe where President Riggs' focus was not as much that future that there might be an appetite to find a future president that's more focused in those areas?
I don't know if I could put it that way. I will say that I think that the future for higher education means that we'll need the next president to focus on some things that Janet didn't have to or only has begun to have to. Examples of that would include financial stability, financial sustainability, for example, because the cost of higher education continues to increase, despite the fact that there is a lot of rancor on that topic. There's a lot of federal and state level political concern on that topic. There's a lot of parental concern on that topic. So that's something that's going to have to take the attention of the next president, maybe more than Janet had to. She had to continue to balance the budget and make sure that we were staying in a solvent position, which she did in a great way. You know, many people forget that while she was a PhD in psychology and taught psychology, that her in college, she was a double major and her other major was math. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she was strong around the numbers. The other thing that we probably need to think more about in the future than we did in the past is the impact of technology on higher education and on our academic, on our curriculum. The people who graduate today and in the future are going to be working with and alongside robots and artificial intelligence. And why that's been coming, the wave is starting to hit the shore, and we need to think about what that means for a liberal arts and science education and how we equip people to live in, with those new conditions and also have vocational skills that transcend those conditions.
And so what you're describing, and correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like that the people that you may be looking for this position don't necessarily have to come from the higher education field already, that, there may be potential opportunities to find folks with backgrounds in other areas, business or in maybe the political sphere. And I know that some college presidential searches over the years at other institutions that have gone that way have had mixed success when they're pooling candidates from outside of higher ed. Do you think that it's do you think that the search committee will look actively to recruit? You talked earlier about the idea of recruiting particular folks to apply. Will look outside of academia when inviting those candidates to apply?
Yeah, I can say with a high degree of certainty that we will definitely look at candidates from sort of the traditional job family within higher education, but also people who come from what would be considered non-traditional backgrounds. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons we selected Russell Reynolds as a search firm is that they work across various industry verticals. So we'll definitely look at that. We have done our homework and understand what have led people from both traditional and non-traditional backgrounds to succeed or not succeed. And one of the things that has to be constant regardless is the ability to listen, learn, and understand the business and the culture that exists at both within higher education and at Gettysburg. And the failures in both cases have been because people sort of think they have the answer before they get into the job. And some of the input that we've received, even this morning in the open forum that we had for support staff, demonstrate that the first thing people want is a president, a new president who will take, 3-6 months and really learn the organization and do a lot more listening than speaking before they decide they have ideas for the strategy and the vision of the school going forward.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the search firm Russell Reynolds. I think there's perhaps a little bit of uncertainty as to what exactly the role of a search firm is in the process. Could you talk a little bit about how the search committee is working with Russell Reynolds? What, after these forums where some folks from Russell Reynolds have been present early on, how they'll continue to contribute to the search moving forward, and ultimately you know, where their work ends and the committee has to take over in deciding on who the next president will be?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Ben. So I'll just start off by saying that their role is as advisor to the committee, that there's no point in the process where the committee sort of hands over the steering wheel. But as the advisor, part of what they bring is the knowledge of having done this many, many times before and being able to show us where potential pitfalls and landmines are in the process. And we've had several large and small examples of that already where they've been very helpful just in going through the process of having these open forums, the listening sessions. They have done the heavy lifting when it's come to synthesizing all the input that we've received from the survey and from all these listening sessions into a cogent set of three or four pages that will constitute what candidates will look at to see what the school is looking for in its next president. And then they'll really engage when it comes to the search process, where they have research staff, people who we won't actually see, the people behind the scenes, if you will, who make the calls to people that we identify as potential candidates, probe to learn about interest, and then they'll help us sift through the qualifications of both proactive and reactive applicants and help us through the interview process. Mm-hmm. They'll, to the extent we need them, they'll help us with the final negotiations with the identified candidate. I happen to have some background in that area, so we might not use them as much as other organizations might, but nevertheless, it'll be great to have them involved. And then they also can be helpful in terms of helping to identify a sort of a template to have a successful transition of the next president to the organization.
I think one thing that one thing that's on everybody's minds is that this is obviously more than a job. You know, it's a lifestyle being a president of an institution. And one thing that I've heard a lot is that since President Riggs was so very involved with the campus before she became president, she was just an obvious choice. So in terms of the committee searching for a president, while Russell Reynolds may help with the more like, this person has great qualifications for these like sets within the job part, what is the committee looking for someone who, you know, may not have an inherent love of the orange and blue, but like could develop one over time?
Mm-hmm. In terms of background or personal skills or all the above?
All the above, I guess.
Okay. Well, I happen to bring the key themes from that we've begun to put together. And so I can tell you in general what we're looking. First of all, we're looking for someone who can, who has the confidence and the strength to transition from strong leadership that we presently have. So we need to have someone who's going to be very comfortable standing on his or her own, but at the same time, maybe is comfortable going to their neighbor, since Janet and Ed will continue to live on College Avenue, and say, hey, what advice would you have for me here? We need someone who has the strength of character and the self-confidence to work well in that kind of setting. We need someone who has strong leadership and management and can take the current strategic plan, which is a strong strategic plan, and works across the areas of impact, inclusion, and internationalization and innovation, and extend that to whatever she or he sees as the vision we need to take us forward. We need someone who is going to either themselves work or work with a partner on creating this financial sustainability. And part of that is going to be through how we manage the existing financials, but a big slug is going to be fundraising. In the last few years, Janet would tell you she has spent about 70% of her time fundraising. So that tells you how important it is to have a strong senior leadership staff around that individual who actually implements the strategy and conducts the business of the school day in and day out. We need someone who is going to develop strong relationships and partnerships outside the college, part of the future of small colleges probably extends to developing partnerships with other types of educational organizations, other small colleges, maybe larger colleges. There's 3,600 private colleges in the U.S. right now. And just like in any industry that's undergoing some consolidation, part of what you see there is some partnering, joint venturing, mm-hmm. merging, mm-hmm. and the person's going to need to be comfortable working across those kind of settings. Someone who can understand and build on our brand and move us from a strong regional brand to a national brand and move us to becoming one of the truly elite liberal arts and sciences universities. And then finally, someone who's very comfortable moving us from the early days of success we've had with diversity and really turn us into a campus where diversity isn't something that's an initiative, but rather something we're able to live almost without thinking about it, and that we're a unified college community and not a community that has a lot of people from diverse backgrounds, but has a community that represents diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm.
And then so perhaps the final question, as we're running out of time, is that after we hear you at the forum later today, when is the next time we can expect to hear from the Presidential Search Committee? And then, you know, you mentioned that eventually we'll get an announcement, but what happens between now and then in terms of what public updates might be made available and how folks can follow along with the search?
I think what we'll do is we'll find points along the continuum to talk with the college community, probably through email type of updates, to give a sense of how well the process is going forward, to the extent we can provide any numbers around applicants and our success in that regard, we'll provide that. And we'll try to continue to keep people on track. We'll make sure at every point to let them know that we can take questions and hopefully provide answers through presidentialsearch.edu, which is the email site for the search. But it will get a little bit more quiet probably until we have some announcements to make. We're going to have to try to create some balance between the confidentiality that we spoke about earlier, but not losing people's attention to the process. Because part of what we want to do is keep people used to the idea that there is a change that's going to be taking place. And I know Janet's doing her part in that regard, both in terms of, on one hand, making it clear that she's still in her position and we're going to get the benefit of her leadership all the way up until she's done. But on the other hand, that change is going to come to the college community, and she's going to help facilitate it, and we are as best we can, too.
All right. Charlie Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Charlie Scott for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the Gettysburgian staff and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Join us next week. We'll talk to Student Senate President Nick Arbaugh. Have a great week.